All right, we're going to jump in here together, guys, this morning. We're still working through this series in the book of Proverbs, talking about how to foolproof your life, and hope that after the service you get some more time to enjoy visiting and spending time getting to know some of the people here that call CR Community Church their home. This morning, you talk about starting off with a boom. John started off 2 weeks ago talking about how to about sexuality and the role that it plays in foolproofing our life. And then to get to a little less touchy subject, Dan last week talked about money. And so this week I'm going to talk about discipline and the role that discipline plays in foolproofing our life. So hopefully this maybe won't scratch you quite as deep as the last couple of Sundays we have. But still, nonetheless, I mean, you talk about a challenging subject. My original title for this was actually Nobody Likes Discipline. And if you're like me, I don't like correction. I never liked to be disciplined when I was young. And because of my pride, I don't like people to tell me when I'm wrong today. And I don't even, self-discipline doesn't come naturally to me. I'm not a particularly self-disciplined person. It's painful for me to discipline myself for whether it's exercise or what I eat, whatever it is. I'm just not a particularly disciplined person. So this was a deep and difficult subject for me. If you're a student of the Bible, probably the proverb that you know the best or is most often quoted about discipline comes from chapter 3, and it's verses 11 to 12. It says, "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke." Now, I read that and I go, yeah, anytime I'm rebuked, I resent it, right? So right away, I'm a little tongue-in-cheek with this whole thing. But here's why. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, just as a father disciplines the son in whom he delights. Knowing that the person that is carrying out the discipline and knowing that they genuinely love you really does make a big difference in how you receive that correction, doesn't it? You think about this from the perspective of any child that has a parent that's just overbearing, and that the child isn't really sure if mom or dad really loves me and really has my best interest in mind. It's very difficult. It can be very traumatic to receive any kind of discipline from someone that you don't think genuinely loves you and has your best interest in mind. The flip side of that is even under the best of circumstances, right? Even if you know that your parents love you, it's possible to say, "I don't like this. It's not easy." But in your heart of hearts, you know and believe that your parents or whoever it is that's carrying out the correction loves you and has your best interest in mind, right? Makes all the difference in the world. And I think that's one of the keys here is you read that first verse 11, and the important thing whenever we're talking about God and his correction in our life is to never forget the reality of why he disciplines us. And it's because he loves us and he's got our best interests in mind in everything he does. One of the things that's interesting in culture, you can see sort of the changing nature of how parents discipline their children. And of course, a lot of studies have been done about this, about how our attitudes in the Western world about spanking has changed over the last several years and continues to change. And I'm not going to say a word about spanking one way or the other. Talk about getting in trouble, right? Hot water. I'm not going to say anything about that this morning because it's not my point, and I think it'll just distract from what I think God's message really is for us this morning. But it's interesting because even no matter what your stance is on spanking, here's the thing. I don't think any of us would disagree that when we look at the world today, we would all say that youth today probably don't get enough discipline, however you discipline them. We looked at the world, we think it's a largely undisciplined world, and we think that most children still today really are in need of discipline, however you as a parent or grandparent are going to carry that out, right? It's an important part of shaping our youth today. And so even as we can see, like, as our attitudes about spanking have changed, it's interesting because parents have become more creative in the ways that they think about how to discipline their kids. So I always notice these stories because it's a good reminder to me that although we might not like spanking, there are plenty of ways and very creative ways to discipline our children. One of the ones I came across not long ago was a mom that found out that her daughter, who said that she was going to sleepovers with her friends, only to come find out that her friends were telling their parents that they were sleeping over at her house, were actually sleeping over at an older boy's house on a regular basis. Mom came to find out about this and about the deception that had happened, and mom had bought tickets for her daughter and her friends to go to this concert. And so the mom put the tickets up on an auction site as a way of saying, if you think you're going to be able to get away with this stuff and not suffer consequences, you've got another thing coming. This one was really controversial. On YouTube, it got 32 million views. So the daughter, you know, you have to wonder about the things that people post on Facebook thinking that their parents aren't going to see them, right? I had a whole bunch of great illustrations about this, but this is the one I chose. So this dad finds out that the daughter is complaining about the chores that she has to do around the house. And so the dad took a 45 and put an end to her computer. Now, it's interesting. A word of caution here for any of you parents that think this is a great idea. The sheriff's department and the CPS in the state that he was from came and visited father when they found out about this. So father actually had some consequences as well as daughter. But he got so much publicity from this that Dr. Phil weighed in and had dad and daughter on the show and even on the Today Show. And they guess they had a family makeup. Dad said that he intentionally didn't shoot the hard drive, so the hard drive was still good to save all of our pictures and stuff. But. Now, I really love this one. Now, this is a great one. So, mom sells son's truck. Very mad mother selling 16-year-old son's 1993 Ford Ranger. Drove 3 months before son forgot to use his brain and got caught driving drunk. $3,500 or best offered. I love the tag here. Call meanest mother in Wyoming. I had to smudge out the phone number because I thought there will be some people that will call to get parenting tips from this mom. And perhaps the best one of all in the last couple of years is the dad that before they were family going out in Utah. And so the dad hears the mom say to the daughter upstairs, "You can't go out in those shorts." And the daughter said, "Well, yes, I can." So dad went upstairs, took a pair of his jeans and cut them really, really short, and they went out on a family outing like that. This made big news, and the daughter actually really, it's interesting to read all of her comments, but she said, her quote was, you know, I got the point, and I learned the lesson of just how much he loves me and really does care about me. And she goes on to talk about how it's influenced her behavior and how she chooses to dress and why she dresses the way she does. So, odd ways of, you know, we may not spank, but there's still plenty of creative ways to discipline our children, right? I want to take a minute here. And the book of Proverbs uses the word discipline or instruction. It's the same word in the Hebrew 34 times. And so in a book that's only 31 chapters long, this is one of the major themes in this book. And so I took just the verses where it talks about discipline because it uses them in a couple of different ways. And if you pull out your notes on the front page there, I listed them. And what I'm going to do is I'm just, you know, one of the neat things that I get to do that you guys pay me to do is when I teach, I get to spend an enormous amount of time just reading this stuff and you know, letting it wash through, and it really grinds through on me. And so one of the things that I think is true is the Bible has this unique way of calling out in each one of us. Even if we read the exact same words, the Bible has this unique way of calling out different things in each one of us. And so I want to show you these verses and give you the next couple of minutes. They're in your notes, or you can just read them on the screen, but I'm just going to do this silently and just let them play through. You might make a note or something like that in your bulletin if something really sticks out to you for you to go back later on tonight to review. But let's just pray and ask God that he'd use his word to challenge us this morning. What a great gift you've given us, Father, in your word. And I want to ask that just in the next few minutes here, looking at these verses, that you would stir up in each one of us a sense of what it means to live well for you, because we don't want to be fools, and you've given us wisdom and insight to live a life that's not only pleasing to you, but can be beneficial and enjoyable for us. So thank you for your word. Amen. All right, I hope that gave you just a little bit of an insight as to some of the different ways that the word discipline is used in the book of Proverbs. It's used several different ways. And I hope that maybe tonight or this afternoon you can spend some time reading back over. And, you know, discipline is not just for our children, but we all need correction in our lives. And it's worthwhile thinking about how that plays a part just in your own life. If you look through here, so the word, I told you, the word, the Hebrew word for discipline is used interchangeably in the book of Proverbs, both to mean discipline and instruction. And when it's used, there's three different ways that it's really used in here. And so the first way is it's talking about like a coach. And this would be somebody who says, don't do it like this, but do it like this. So I played baseball for a long time, and I had a tendency in baseball to drop my shoulder and swing like this, come through almost like a little bit of golf in my swing. And when I was young, I didn't have, it wasn't a big issue with me, but as baseball got more difficult and pitching became faster and became more difficult to hit, I had trouble with timing. And I had a great coach that recognized exactly what I was doing. And he says, he came to me and he said, I want to help you think about another way to swing, to be able to make contact more consistently. And I was a pretty good baseball player, and like any young person, I didn't take correction real well. But I realized this guy was an outstanding baseball player who didn't just talk about baseball, but had played baseball in the minor leagues. And so I listened to him, and what he did is he said he showed me, it was like a mirror, and he showed me exactly what I was doing. And what he did is he said, I want you to learn to keep your elbow up, and this will help you come through more straight across. And so he showed me, he even came and put my arm, you know, he held my arm up like this as I would start my swing, and it made an enormous difference. And so a lot of the way the word instruction in particular is used in the book of Proverbs is saying, you see that this is not the correct way to do it, and here is how you are supposed to do it. So it serves, on the one hand, this word discipline, it serves as an instructor, trying to help us to figure out how to do life better. And again, this goes back to that whole concept I was saying at the very beginning. It's so important. If you think that God's just a killjoy and doesn't want you to enjoy life, you've never really spent time reading the Bible. Because that's just not the truth of the way God lays out who he is and how he talks about life for us. God's intent for us, even in all the rules and regulations, is just like a parent says, here's the boundaries. You've got all this life to enjoy, but if you go over this fence, there's going to be harm and consequences to you. Even though as kids we can't always see that, as adults we can't always see that. And see, God is just like that. It's not that he was just waiting for us to make a mistake. The Bible makes us very clear that he is someone who loves us like a parent and wants for us to hit the baseball in life better all the time. The second way discipline is used is the way we typically think of it is, and that's consequences for the purpose of correction. And I'm very intentional about the way I'm saying this. It's not God saying, you blew it, here's the punishment. It's if you read, see, here's the thing. If you read in the Bible, and probably the best place to do this, go back to the book of Exodus and see how whenever the nation of Israel, as God as their coach or their leader, as their guide, whenever the people did what they were told directly not to do, and God comes and confronts them, it's always for the purpose of reinforcing what? What they already knew. The discipline is never malicious, and the discipline is never an end in itself. It's always for the purpose of correction. And see, my wife helped me realize that I did not do this well as a parent early on. That I would discipline our kids, but sometimes I would discipline them when they didn't really exactly know what the expectation was. See, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense to discipline somebody if they don't know what they're being disciplined for and they didn't understand the violation of the rule to begin with. I don't think that's very helpful. And that went a long way towards helping me be more thoughtful about correction in my own children's life is because when I see my kids do something, especially when they do something that antagonizes mom, man, I want to come down on my kids. You don't disrespect your mom. I'm angry. But I tell you what, if I just discipline out of that anger, I'm not really helping my kids figure out what a better path is and what my expectations are and what my desire for them in terms of the way I desire for them to learn to treat and honor their mom, right? So that's why people always say, you know, don't just discipline out of anger. And I think that that's really true. Look, your anger ought to motivate you to discipline. If you're not angry about your kids being disrespectful to other people or violating basic tenets that are healthy for them, if that doesn't get you angry and you don't do anything about it, don't kid yourself. You don't really love your kids. You don't. Because if you're not helping guide them and help them understand choices and consequences, you don't really love your kids, because all of us need guidance and correction, because none of us can figure out how to live life solely on our own because of our own natural dispositions. We'll all fail from time to time, and that's why parents are called to be good guides or coaches for their kids, right? The other thing that it's really important for me to point out right here, and I don't really have a better place to do it, so I'm just going to remind you right now, is I've heard a lot of people say, you know, when they encounter a health issue or they experience some sort of trial or difficulty in their life, sometimes people will say, well, this must be God's punishment or God's discipline in my life. And I want to tell you, you know, you really ought to be really careful about saying that for yourself or for other people. Because the reality is there, a lot of the pain that we suffer in life is just the consequences of our own dumb behavior. It's not God intentionally putting us in a situation where he's trying to teach us something, right? And like if you're reading the Bible, when God is disciplining people, individuals or a nation, notice he's always very clear about it. There's no wonder in people's lives. God's very good about confronting people directly so they know exactly why they're being punished, why they're experiencing the discipline that they are. And so part of what we have to realize is a lot of the pain, difficulties, and trials that we experience in our own lives, it's not God disciplining us, it's us being dumb. And we need to recognize we suffer an enormous amount of pain in our life because we're dumb. And it's not wise. It doesn't help us to blame God or, right, feel like God's being a killjoy and punishing us unnecessarily. And the second thing that's true is a lot of, you know, the reality is a lot of the pain and disappointment and hurt that happens in the world is because we live in a fallen, broken world. And it doesn't have anything to do with any direct thing that you've done or somebody else does. See, this is the law of common grace that we all live under. You don't have to be a, you know, this is what's so frustrating to us is we see people we see that they're selfish and we look at their lives and we go, man, these people, they don't play by any of the rules and yet things seem to be going so well for them. See, this is the law of living in the world today, which means that it rains on the wicked and the righteous. We all receive enormous blessings in life, whether we're doing things by the rules or not. It's the law of God's goodness in the world that we live in. But the opposite is also true. We're all affected by the pain of sin and living in a broken world that because of disobedience, it was brought into the world a long time ago. We all live in a fallen, broken world too, and that is that's what marks up a whole lot of the disappointment and pain that we experience in life also. The third way that discipline is used in here is talking about exercising self-control. So this is like whatever we all have these appetites, not just for food, but for different things. And the wise person learns self-discipline. That just because I really enjoy something, right? Like food on a cruise, right? There's consequences if I just eat all this really good food, right? Bad news. So exercising self-control. The interesting thing, I mean, if you haven't already figured this out, right, there's this interesting correlation between this. The more self-control we exert in our lives, the less need I think that there is for correction in our life, right? So self-discipline helps us avoid discipline, right? Correction. Isn't that interesting how that works? So one of the questions that I hope everybody asks is, who needs discipline? And everybody, if I said, do children today need discipline? Raise your hand. Yes? No? Maybe so? Come on. I see some people not raising their hands. So some of you think our youth don't need any guidance and direction. Now, if I said to you, how many of you think that your friends, your family, people that you work with need correction? Raise your hand. People were a little quicker on that one. How many of you would say your spouse? Oh, no, let's not go there. Let's not go there. How many of you would say you need discipline and correction? Oh, you see, I just coached you on that. But if I had asked you that first, right? But isn't that the truth? You know, we're so good at recognizing where other people screw up, you know? And we're good at even diagnosing how to help people get better. But man, it's difficult sometimes for us to be honest about our own failings, and there's an interesting thing that will help us become better at that, and I'll talk about that here in just a minute or close. So I want to give you an illustration that I came across a couple of weeks ago about why why discipline is so important to helping us become well-rounded people. And the example I heard was from a child psychologist in the Atlantic Monthly. This article came out a long time ago, and his name is Jerome Kagan. And probably some of you have read his parenting books, because he was sort of like the child psychologist in the late 70s and 80s and into the 90s. And one of the things that they discovered, and he talks about this, is how just biochemically we are wired, everyone. And it doesn't matter how old you are, and it doesn't even matter what culture you come from. We are wired to respond to threat differently. And here's the three ways that people typically are wired. So the first one is the anxious person. This is the person that there's an imminent threat, and they see it, and their immediate reaction is to flee. Get as far away from whatever that threat is as possible immediately. That's their default mode. Another group of people are aggressive people. These are people that are optimistic that they can confront the issue head on and defeat whatever that threat is. That's their hard wiring, that when they're in a threatening situation, they want to confront it. Running away isn't going to solve any problems. Got to deal with this head on right now. And the third way is people that are philosophical. These are the people that probably a good way of thinking about this is, well, let's calm down here. This would be John, Pastor John, right? He's thoughtful. He's strategic. He says, let's not make any rash decisions, right? So you can sort of play through this. You can think of different people that you know that this is their default mode. Now, here's the thing. Notice that there's not anything wrong with any one of these three. It's not that one is better than the other, except in certain situations, right? So if your natural default is to be aggressive, and it's really genuinely a life-threatening situation, being aggressive probably is not the thing that's going to allow you to live to fight for another day. And probably the person that's going to live to fight for another day is a person that recognizes, no matter how optimistic they are, that the best thing for me to do is flee. But there's other times where there's something that seems like an imminent threat that only upon subtle reflection becomes clear that there's a thoughtful way to deal with this. In that case, the patient person would be the wise person. So you can develop in different scenarios how each one of these natural defaults would be the best way to handle a situation, right? But you can also recognize that no matter what your natural default is, you're never going to be wholly, adequately prepared to deal with all of life's situations. And it's just because it's the way you're hardwired. See, this explains why in life you have situations, right, where after the fact, what happens? Sometimes we have these moments where we go, oh, I should have done, or if I could go back and only do, right? It's because what we're doing is we're acting out of whatever our hard wiring is in life according to the situation that dictates, only to come to find out that, you know what, our hard wiring is inadequate for us to be able to deal with all of life. See, this is why wisdom is so difficult to obtain, and this is why discipline is such an important part of this, because the wise person recognizes that no matter what my hard wiring is, there is an appropriate response, and they're different for each situation. But it's so hard for us to get past our hard wiring. And he goes on to talk about why this is so important, because although one thing feels right to you, whatever it is that's intuitive and instinctive for you, whatever your habitual response is, we need to be trained to deal with all of life's circumstances thoughtfully, not just with our own default mode, right? This is especially true in parenting. Listen to what he says. Modern parents have been taught that their children need to find themselves and to be themselves. But unless parents intervene, their children's natural temperament will dominate them, and they won't learn to act wisely in situations in which their habitual temperamental response is inappropriate, right? You know, I marvel at this. I've got five kids, and my three older boys are relatively close in age, and I marvel how different they are in personality and temperament. And, you know, one of the things that's key is my wife and I have to be thoughtful about how to help each one of the kids understand their hardwiring and understand that there's nothing wrong with their hardwiring. It's a gift from God. But God expects them to become well-rounded young men. And so that's where my wife and I have to be thoughtful about how do we help them see all of life and all of the possibilities and all of the different character traits that will help them become well-rounded to face all that life, the choices that life offers, right? Because we all know people that are really gifted in one area, and those gifts can be, just be an amazing asset to their life and help them get so far down the road. But haven't you also seen that those same gifts in people, because they're not tempered, can also be very destructive in people, right? We see that. And people, they need to learn to use their gifts and their assets in the way that God designed them to, but also to be well-rounded people so that those assets don't end up being destructive to them also. So three keys I have for you just in closing just to help you think about, I think, the role that discipline plays in helping us become wise people, because that's really the goal of Proverbs. The first one is a key. It's not the key. It's not the only one. But a big key to avoiding unnecessary correction is surrounding yourself with good people. And here's my definition of good people. You need to find people that love God and know Him and that love you. You think about in the Bible, in the Old Testament in particular, the prophets were people that what? They were all people that knew God and knew His expectations. And that's why they were able to go and confront people, because they knew who God was and they knew that God wanted what was best for people, and they were able to speak into their lives. I'm not completely convinced, but I'm sort of thinking from my week and a half study about this that this is sort of what will help us as people determine the difference between the sort of the pain of life and the general difficulties that we all experience, and having the ability to really have insight as to where God is coaching and guiding and directing us. Because I think most of us are just, we have this blind spot and we just can't see real well where we're screwed up. We're great at seeing it in our kids, we're great at seeing it in our bosses and our spouses and other people, but I really think most of us have these blinders that just make it really hard for us to be honest with ourselves. And so this is why, see, I think the Bible tells us that we were made for relationships with God and with other people. And see, this is the whole key, is that when you find other people that genuinely know and love God, and they're invested in your life at a level that they see and know who you are, what your gifts, what your temperaments are, those are the people that are, and you have to invite them in. You have to ask them to speak to you. You can't push back when they tell you difficult things. See, this is the difference between a child and an adult, right? Children don't have the choice. When we need to tell them something, they're going to listen. As adults, we have to become mature enough to be able to want to listen to those people and those voices. And I think that's the key to distinguishing where God is really at work guiding and coaching and correcting me in my life, is having other people that can help me identify that. So you might ask yourself, who's that voice in your life? And if you can't just right now come up with that, if it doesn't naturally come to your mind right away, it would be good for you to start thinking about, if I really take this seriously and I really want to become more well-rounded, it's just like working out, going to the gym. You want to get healthy, but man, it's hard when it's time to get in the car or go for a run or a bike ride. Or it's hard sometimes. And this is where the discipline of doing it, you know, is so key, is to find people that you know will do this well. I think that the key to being able to learn from those people is just all about humility. You know, I'm the last person that should be talking about this. Can I get somebody else to go up and talk about humility? You have to recognize that you're a broken person. And you have to recognize that you're deeply flawed. And unless you, and I think this is one of the ways to find out if you're really, some people think that they're genuinely humble, but I think one of the best ways to know if you're genuinely humble is, when is the last time you asked someone or you had people in your life that give you correction or coaching or direction? Because you may assume that you're a humble person, but I think one of the easiest ways to tell whether you really genuinely are humble and willing to learn from others and learn from God is to see where other people that you've invited in give you guidance and direction, and you're willing to respond to that. The last one is this, and this is just, I'm going back to what I said at the very beginning. I think the key to being able to appreciate God's guidance and discipline in our life, the only way we'll really come to trust and believe that God's way is good for me is to know that He's God and He knows me better than anybody else and He loves me more than anybody else and He knows the exact prescription for me to becoming the whole person that He made me to be. And it's not, like I said, I don't think it's ever going to be easy. Like, you're going to be like, oh, yay, correction, coaching, discipline, right? I don't think even under the best of circumstances that's ever easy. But if you don't have a picture of how much God loves you, it's going to be so difficult to ever appreciate His guidance in your life with anything. Father, help us. Help us to recognize that we're all blind in so many ways, and that You provided this wealth of opportunity for us to be able to enjoy life as it was meant to be for each one of us. Lord, help us to recognize the necessity of discipline and self-discipline in our own lives. I ask this in Jesus' name. Help us be wise this week. Amen. Hey,